Welcome to The Firing Line with Rick Travis, Legislative Director of the California Rifle and Pistol Association. The Firing Line radio show is brought to you by the California Rifle and Pistol Association, CCW Safe, and Turner's Outdoorsman. And now, here's your host, Rick Travis.
Good afternoon, patriots of the Inland Empire and beyond. I'm your host, Rick Travis, the Legislative Director of the California Rifle and Pistol Association, coming to you this Saturday. We're going to talk about some things a little differently. Normally, I get on here and, as you all know, rant about Sacramento. There will be some of that. I talk a little bit about what's going on. And once in a blue moon, I, as an ode to the great Phil Neyman, who did this show for years, I toss in a little bit about myself. So I'll do that in the last segment. But the reason I'm talking to you today, folks, is because we had a couple of people this last week who wrote in, and one person called in to say, hey, I don't understand this flawed policy you have with fighting for deer on Catalina that has nothing to do with gun rights. I donate to the CRPA. I had somebody else go, why are you so upset about a bill that, you know, Assemblyman Assaley had going on with dogs? I had somebody else call me up and say, why do you guys care about some of this other stuff that's not gun related? And I felt like, well, hey, you know, there's two or three people that are having these complaints, issues, concerns, criticisms. Those are all good things, and CRPA is always an open-door policy. And I can say that with confidence because, folks, one of the people calling in questioning our policy on Catalina is actually a member of the Conservancy who we're fighting on Catalina. And we don't discount the question and by saying, oh, well, they're with the opposition. We meet it head-on because, ladies and gentlemen, you can be pro-2A and be a member of a conservation organization on either side of the line. And that's not necessarily antithetical. A lot of times it may be an educational issue. And so that's why I thought, you know, this is probably a good time to have a chat with whatever you're doing on this fine Saturday, or if you're listening to it on our podcast during the rest of the week, to talk about why is the California Rifle Pistol Association, the CRPA, involved in this space, and what do we base it on? Or are we any different? So let's start off with that. First thing we base it on is a thing that most of us are familiar with called science. We don't base it on emotion. And I'm a guy that, look, as you'll find out later in the show, I have a really big heart. And when I choose to love on something, I go all in. Like, I hold nothing back. I don't name my dog like John Wayne because it's just a dog. No, dogs are members of the family, and they are treated just like a member of the family and grieved when we lose them. Like a member of the family. So what does that mean? Well, here's what it means. It means that when I go to represent you in Sacramento in a local county out on an island off the coast called Catalina, I do so firmly rooted in science. And so let's look at why we do that. Well, to start off with, part of the CRPA's mission statement is conservation, and has been for 150 years. That's right, folks. Since 1875, this has been part of our mission. And so how do we do that? Well, in 1875, there were a lot of things going on in California that weren't right. One of them was, back in 1875, the Democrats controlled everything, and you couldn't hunt in California unless you're a market hunter. And that wasn't good either, because market hunters weren't really well regulated, and they did a lot of damage, as did people around. And that's why I hate the term market hunter, because it makes it sound like any of us that have chose to hunt to put food on the table. We were not going out, nor have we ever, to blast as many things as we can see. So back in 1902, a group of very famous people led by a guy that some of you may have heard of named Teddy Roosevelt came up with what would be known as the North American model of wildlife conservation. And it set a group of principles. So those principles are as follows. Wildlife resources are a public trust. That's the first pillar or principle. And I'm going to go through these in the next couple segments. So what that meant was wildlife, from the smallest little mouse run around to the biggest bird in the air belong to you, the public. They don't belong to people. This is a direct pushback against the European model of, oh, sorry, those are the king's deer, and you must do what the king wants to be able to get them. No, this is America. We don't play that game. And so it was the job of the people and the government of the people, you know, that we the people, by the people, for the people thing we always talk about here on the show. Yep, here's where it comes into play. Wildlife belongs to the people. Now, there are those in opposition to this model, and I'm going to talk about that. You know, this model has been around for over 100 years. In fact, it's coming up pretty soon on like its 125th anniversary here in a couple of years. This model is the most successful model for saving wildlife on the face of the earth. More wildlife has recuperated. Let's just take ducks, for example. By the middle of the Depression, there were almost no ducks, and now we have more ducks in the North American flyway, which is the migratory area in the United States and Canada, than were here at the beginning of the Revolutionary War. Like, that's an incredible story. We have the ability to see more waterfowl than George Washington could see. And obviously, we have a lot more people in North America than back in George's day. But there are people who say, oh, well, you can't own the wildlife. Like, no. Well, the danger to the people that believe you can't own wildlife or they shouldn't be in the public trust is then they have no protectors. And they're like, well, that's not true. Our little club, our little group will, no. Little clubs and little groups change. They change leadership. They change their theories. And I'll just put out the Khabib Plateau in Arizona, which is a plateau where there were deer, and a bunch of people that were overly emotional about deer said, we need to get rid of all the predators so the deer can have peaceful lives and, you know, Bambi and her grandmother can live out their wonderful days. Well, that's what they did. And you know what ended up happening? Overpopulation, and then a mass starvation and die-off. One of the worst wildlife disasters ever. Why? Because public policy was based on pure emotion and not science. The second one was market games are eliminated. And for the most part, we have been able to eliminate all those markets for game. There are some exceptions. And to the credit of the California Department of Fish and Wildlife in this space, they have done tremendous work along with the United States Department of Fish and Wildlife and several other federal and state organizations in catching the illegal trade and sale of wildlife. That continues. I personally work with CalTIPS, where people can call in and turn in poachers and polluters that are doing harm to the environment. So that part of the model works. The next part is pillar three, allocation of wildlife is by law. Now, this is an area that frustrates a lot of you as hunters because sometimes there's X number of tags, sometimes there's not. And I'm going to hover on tags. A couple of years ago, I went and sat in a meeting on the San Gabriel Monument, and a person at the meeting said, well, you guys are just massacring deer in the San Gabriels. And I looked at her, and I'm like, what? And she goes, well, you kill thousands of deer. And I'm thinking, there's not thousands of deer in the San Gabriels, but okay, where are you getting this from? Well, because there's X number of tags sold. And I said, do you realize that hunter success rate, generally speaking, in the San Gabriels is around less than 10% in a good year? Which means if there was 1,000 tags, keeping the math simple, maybe 100 deer were taken, and over a 2.5 months, that's about 35 deer a month, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less. And then you look at the raw acreage of the San Gabriels. That's nothing, folks. That's nothing. By the way, cars kill literally, according to Caltrans, 15 times more deer, 15 times more than we do. In fact, disease. And I can go through the long laundry list, poor management, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, push hunting down to usually number 9 or 10 in the top 10 reasons wildlife dies, or not even in the top 10. So I need you to understand that when we talk about the allocation of wildlife by law, We're talking about a tag system. We're talking about what you can hunt, when you can hunt, where you can hunt, how you can hunt, everything behind that. That is designed by its very nature to make sure that we have a surplus of wildlife every year so that we preserve the wildlife. And the key is that surplus, because as we look at this model, and then we're going to apply it to a couple of things in the third segment, I want you to understand that this is where we have to reside in our fight for wildlife, because wildlife is critical. Wildlife is the early warning system to the rest of us when something's afoot. Wildlife is an area where you can get out and get away from all the noise, your cell phone, this radio that you're listening to. Oh, no, I'm going to be in trouble with the station. But anyways, and get to nature and clear yourself and enjoy this beautiful planet and this beautiful thing that we have. And some of us believe that's from a creator. And to all of you, I tip my hat. And to those that don't, I'm okay with that. But you got to hand it to this planet. We have some really cool stuff that we should be fighting for. That's what this North American model of wildlife conservation is about. It sets the standard. And we're going to talk about some of the challenges when I come back in the next segment here on Firing Line Radio.
The California Rifle and Pistol Association has worked tirelessly for 150 years to promote your rights to self-protection, shooting sports, firearms collecting, hunting, conservation, and every aspect of your Second Amendment rights. CRPA works tirelessly and relentlessly to defend the civil and constitutional rights of individuals to choose to responsibly own and use firearms. Every dollar that CRPA receives from its members and donors stays and works in California to support your hunting and Second Amendment rights and the fight against politicians, elitists, and bureaucrats who would deprive individuals of those rights. Join the California Rifle and Pistol Association today at CRPA.org. That's CRPA.org.
Hi, folks. Rick Travis. If you're a concealed handgun carrier and have a firearm to defend your home, you need to have CCW Safe on your side. CCW Safe is your defense if you're forced to use your firearm for self-defense or the protection of a loved one. CCW Safe provides and pays 100% upfront defense funds for high-quality attorneys, expert witnesses, and investigators you need following a critical incident with no reimbursement. And they do it all for one flat yearly fee starting at $179 a year. CCW Safe has permit and non-permit plans to protect California residents in this state and while traveling across the country. So check out their new ultimate plan with no caps on criminal and civil defense, $1 million for bond coverage, a dedicated $1 million of civil liability, and many other benefits. You defend your life, CCW Safe will defend your freedom and financial future. In California, CCW Safe has got you covered. So join now at ccwsafe.com.
AM 590, The Answer.
This portion of The Firing Line is brought to you by Turner's Outdoorsman.
Welcome back to Firing Line Radio. I'm your host, Rick Travis, the Legislative Director for the California Rifle Pistol Association. And folks, if you're not a member, become one. We need you to join our ranks. There are so many things that the CRPA does statewide, from training, from reaching out and helping women get more involved in all the aspects of shooting sports, family programs, home safety programs. I mean, if you can think about it, we do it. And we have local chapters in your area, including throughout the Inland Empire. And if one isn't close enough, we'll work with you to form another one. Because that's what we do. We help bring people together in this community to make this all stronger and better. We are talking about ways that we make our community better today. And one of those ways is, yes, wildlife, conservation, science. And as I said in the first segment, we get people that come in with concerns. They call us, they write us, they talk to us. Sometimes they yell at me about it. That's okay. And I want you to know we never turn that away. And we don't look when we find out that the person's from a group that's opposing us making the complaints. This dialogue is good. And so I'm trying to give all of you a little bit of background into our thinking. So we're talking about the North American wildlife model for conservation of wildlife conservation. We talked about in the last segment the very first three pillars. And in review, that's wildlife are a public trust. They belong to us. That we have limited markets for gain. We allocate wildlife by law. That's that tag process and hunting seasons. And you know, land use, etc. Then we say wildlife, the fourth pillar is wildlife can be killed only for a legitimate purpose. And that is certain species of mammals, birds, reptiles, and amphibians that do not correspond to traditionally accepted notions of legitimate use. So it's like, you can't say, oh, I'm going to go kill salamanders. People don't eat salamanders. They don't do that. So we're not doing that. But deer, if there's a surplus, right. But here's where it gets interesting. And to a lot of our naysayers, they'll say things like out there, like Stanford Biological Diversity, oh, well, you know, everybody in North America is just greedy. Okay, so wait for it. Here we go. The fifth pillar. Wildlife is an international resource. Wait a second. What? That's right. The North American model says, oh, the wildlife doesn't belong just to us. It belongs to the entire globe, folks. That's right. It may be called the North American model, but it is not North American centric. It is global. And this was done back in 1902, 125 years ago. We have cooperative efforts between the U.S., Canada, Mexico, and other nations around the world for conserving wildlife. And while there's more species that need to be considered, we consistently do that. And we constructed a wall to prevent illegal immigration from, you know, different areas, sometimes impacts wildlife. Because you know what? Wildlife doesn't understand the wall at the southern border. You know, a tortoise shows up and sees a big, you know, 30-foot metal wall. It's like, when did that get here? Because the tortoise is not Mexican and it's not American. It's just a tortoise. And so there are efforts that we use that have to be negotiated to allow wildlife to move from one area to the other. I said in the last segment that we have a lot of wildlife that ends up getting killed on the road. And so people are like, well, why is the CRPA, a gun rights organization, you know, involved in something about wildlife? Well, folks, number one, that's not the only thing we do is the Second Amendment. That's the primary thing we do. But we also are connected to activities associated with it. Hunting and conservation is one of them. And we've been that way, like I said in the last segment, for 150 years. And I'm going to get to that in the next segment, why this all applies. But now we're going on to item number six. Science is the proper tool to discharge wildlife properly. We always, always, always look to the science. CRPA has published a paper on bears, a white paper. That's a scientific paper that says these are all the facts. Now, here's what's interesting. While we were working on that paper, repeatedly, groups here in California said black bears were probably somewhere between 7,000 and 9,000 bears left in the state. It was this tragic loss. And those of us who were involved in this space kept saying that's impossible because human interactions with black bears are at an all-time high. And I'm not talking like, oh, last year it was, you know, 10% this area, now it's 15%. No. I'm talking like, 10 years ago, it was 10%. Now it's 300%. We're talking all-time high. We're talking drastic changes based on some policy management decisions and retrospect were probably the wrong ones. And some of us said that at the time. This is where this model comes in because the model says, no, we're not doing it because, oh, that's Smokey the Bear and we're looking for boo-boo and we're not going to have a bear policy. We don't do it because, oh, I love Winnie the Pooh. Nope, those are not the reasons. We do this because we look at the balance of nature. And what happened because of our white paper and because a lot of pressure from a lot of different groups? Well, now, lo and behold, all the scientists are saying, yeah, we're probably near 75,000 bears. 75,000. Folks, that's 750% of what other groups were trying to say was here in California. And the state probably has the carrying capacity, means the land, that's what carrying capacity means, can support probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 to 30,000 bears. And when we get to too many of anything, we get problems. And this comes back to the last pillar, number seven, is we are constantly, constantly making sure that scientific management is the way we do things. So again, the resources are for everyone. Commerce is and dead wildlife is eliminated. It's allocated to democratic rule of law and may only be killed for a legitimate, non-frivolous purpose. It's an international resource. Every person has an equal opportunity to participate in hunting and fishing, and scientific management is the way that we have proper wildlife conservation. That is why the North American model is so important. And now we're going to look at its application, starting off with those bears. So what happens when you do exceed with a population? Well, that population moves into new ecosystems, and not all those ecosystems are designed for that particular animal. What happens? Animal behavior changes. So now we have bears that operate in packs. Normally, a boar, a male bear, does not hang out with other boars. Like, they normally try to fight each other. So when you see five boars walking together, working together, you have to, as a scientist and a wildlife conservationist, go, we have a problem. And why do we have it? Because we're overpopulated. That also leads to the following. Zoological diseases, which are really a problem for humans because they can sometimes jump from one mammal to another. And so do we have? We have bear encephalitis going on right now in California. Our black bears are infected and are sick. Not all of them, not even half of them, but there is a portion of the population that's got to be regulated. That costs taxpayers dollars and a lot of money and pulls people from other projects that they were working on in wildlife management. It also has led to an incredible amount of change in behavior because guess what? The wild berry population, the wild acorn population did not match the rapid growth of the bear population over the last decade. So as a result, bears aren't staying more on the herbivore side of being an omnivore. An omnivore is an animal that can eat both veggies and fruit, like us, and meat. They have now moved to the meat side, which means we have had more fawns, baby deer, killed by bears in the past couple of years than we had probably in the past couple of decades. And as a result, the deer population is crumbling. Why? Not because of hunters. Yes, to a degree about cars, but it's more importantly because the predators are taking out, in some cases, 90% of the fawns born this year. 90%. Folks, simple math will tell you 10%, if they make it to adulthood, is not going to be enough to sustain the herd. So this is why we get involved, because down the road, what will happen is the people that love the bears will never admit, oh, we made a mistake with the bear population, because that would be emotionally wrong to admit that. And instead, what they will do is they will say, oh, that's due to people going too fast on the roads and hunters. Hunters killed them all. No, hunters aren't killing them all, because guess what, folks? When the population of deers is low in a zone, we close the zone. It's not us. It never has been in the last 100-plus years. So, look, this is why you need to understand that I get the emotional attachment to different animals. They're cute. They do fun things. They're wonderful to watch, but they have to be managed. And this is why we're going to look at the difference between an island and how island theories can be used so incorrectly in management and can be emotionally used and are attempting to be used by those people. You have to look deeper. Something in politics, I always say, follow the money. So in this case, as I'm talking, you should follow the money. How much does Rick get paid to protect wildlife? I don't. I don't have any major supplier. If 15 deer live tomorrow or 15 deer die tomorrow, it does not affect my pocketbook, nor does it affect the pocketbook of the CRPA. So in other words, there is no money involvement for us. So why do we do it? Because the belief in your ability to be able to have your family watch this wildlife, or to be able to take under the law what you need to feed your family. That's why we do it. We'll be back on Firing Line Radio.
Turner's Outdoorsman, California's number one hunting, fishing, and shooting sports retailer since 1971, now has 33 locations across California and one in Tucson, Arizona. Turner's is your one-stop shop for all your shooting, sports, and fishing tackle needs. They offer a full selection and unmatched prices on firearms, ammunition, gun safes, shooting accessories, archery equipment, and fishing tackle. Visit Turner's.com now and sign up for the Turner's Discount Club for free and get their weekly ads and members-only specials sent directly to your inbox. Turner's is a proud supporter of the fight to protect your rights in their continued support of the California Rifle and Pistol Association. For more information and to sign up for Turner's Discount Club or to shop online, visit turners.com.
AM 590, The Answer.
This portion of The Firing Line is brought to you by the California Rifle and Pistol Association.
Welcome back to Firing Line Radio. I'm your host, Rick Travis, the Legislative Director for the California Rifle Pistol Association, and we're talking today about the North American model of wildlife conservation and trying to help you in lay terms understand. During the break, I was talking to one of the people here at the station, and he brought up COVID and the science of COVID, and that was perfectly timed. And Dan, I thank you for that, because one of the things that does is it brings the point, we often get people who claim they understand science, but we don't listen to the people that are actually in the field, because someone comes up with a colorful thing and says, oh, I have a PhD in this, and this is what I wrote a paper on to get that PhD, and you should listen to me. And everybody fawns over them as the new media darling, and then we make a lot of decisions that I think all of us will agree, whether you believe in masks, don't believe in masks, believe in vaccines, don't believe in vaccines, we didn't handle COVID in a really good way. We damaged our kids. We damaged our society. We altered it for the better part of 2 years, which now what we're finding out was a lot of failed things. I will tell you, one of the things I knew about the mask issue was this. If you can smell someone's cigarette, the microns of that smoke are, wait for it, the same size as the ones that would be aerosoled from a virus. So if I could smell your smoke, the mask wasn't working. Pure and simple. But, you know, we all had our beliefs and we all did it. And some people still virtue signal by wearing masks. And I'm like, you know, the pandemic's been over for a while. We can stop now. But this is the same issue we have with the science when it comes to animals. So why are we here? Why are we even talking about this on Firing Line Radio? And here's why, folks, because the assault on the Second Amendment is not always as straightforward as you would like to believe. It is not always someone showing up at your door going, I just want to take your guns. That happened this year. We've met that. We're tearing that apart. We're fighting back and we're getting lots of wins. And we've talked about that on previous shows. It's also sometimes indirect. So let me give you an example of an indirect hit where this model came through. About 8 years ago, I was sitting there working with our former legislative director, Roy Griffith, and we were looking at policies, and a bill came across. And this bill had to do with hunting, and why we obviously cover hunting, because that's a Second Amendment-based activity. And he's like, this is weird. Like, this whole bill deals with, it was out of Imperial County, which made it a little weird, but like, dogs not being near deer while hunting. And I looked at him and I said, well, how does that work? Because like deer season, depending on what you're doing, right, in the zone, runs from basically August through into November-ish. Some zones are extended a little bit longer, depending if they have private land management tags involved and stuff. And wait, up on game season overlaps that significantly, like pretty much the entire season. So if I take my dog and up into a meadow to go hunt quail, chucker, pheasant, etc. Even during dove season, there's a lot of times I see deer in the same area. So what happens? Oh, well, if they see your dog in the field where there's deer, the dog would be dispatched. So this is the first area of the law and why you have to understand science. Oh, so dispatch, like they're going to call a dispatcher and have somebody come out to talk to you? No, there's another word for dispatch. It meant kill. They were going to kill your dog. I'm like, wait, what? He's like, yeah, any park employee, any law enforcement officer, anybody would have the right under this law, if this bill had made into law, to kill your dog on site. Whoa, wait a second. At the time, I had my hunting dog, Rocky, and I'm like, Rocky and I are just in the field to hunt pheasant or quail. You are not killing my prized hunting dog. And if they do, what? Do I get paid for my dog? Because I've got a lot of money and love and everything involved. Nope. Just dead dog. Okay. Now it's a sad story. It's a sad bill. And so you might be going, okay, I kind of get it, Rick. But again, how's that connect to the Second Amendment? Oh, Here we go. This is Speed Rick in the legislature. So what this bill would actually do is not just kill my dog, but then it would put me in a position of where, well, I don't want to go hunt because you know what? I can't hunt and grab the birds because I can't see where they fall. And trying to find a brown bird in a brown field, no bueno. And if I don't recover that bird, then I'm in trouble under the fish and game laws that I signed up to with my hunting license. And then I could lose my right to hunt. And then if I lose my right to hunt, I can also lose my right to own firearms. And then you start hearing some of the legislators talk, well, shoot, if they're not hunting, then they don't need ranges. And if they don't need ranges, they don't need guns. And that, do you see where this goes, folks? Like, literally, votes were starting to stack up. And it's from a guy in Imperial Valley who's talking about this stuff. And I'm thinking, like, what crisis? What crisis with a dog and a deer ever happened in Imperial Valley to call for this piece of legislature to have tens of thousands of dollars invested in it? And the fact was nothing, nothing. So what was this bill really about? It had nothing to do with deer. It was a backdoor to go after your firearms rights. Now, how big is this? Well, what's happened is groups like the Brady Group and the Giffords Group and others have teamed up with a lot of small organizations who hate hunters. They hate our dogs. And to them, the only dog left, and no problems with any of you that have one of these, you know, what we have done with dogs over the last 135,000 years is amazing. All the ways we took wolves and made them look at everything from things that we carry around, some of you, and baby strollers and stuff. And if that's your gig, more power to you. Not mine, but I'm not going to put you down. But look, telling me that I have to do that would be like me telling you you have to have a hunting dog and go hunting. That's not right for either one of us to do to the other one. We each have a right to love on that family pet in the way we want to. This is how far these groups go out. Some of these groups have even tried in this state and other states to say that, like, oh, so I have a hunting dog and I see you put your little mini poo inside your baby stroller. Well, to me, that's cruel and unusual punishment. And I, because I heard your dog bark for help, I'm all of a sudden a media translator and can get a lawyer to sue you. And that's actually happened in a couple of states, folks. That's not make-believe. So why do we fight this? Because remember, in areas where it's seen, like in California, that you might be being cruel to your animal and doing something other people don't like, is a reason for a gun violence restraint order to pull all your firearms away from you. This is where the connection of these laws come to what we do at the CRPA. And they're not based on science. They're based on pure emotional and maniacally emotional stuff. And I'm being polite. Folks, when we go to things like Catalina, it's the whole idea. Let's just take it from the top. Why do you want to get rid of the deer in Catalina? Because we want the island to only have non-invasive plants and wildlife. Okay. So let's say hypothetically we said, okay, goodbye to the deer. What else are we doing? Well, nothing. Oh, no, that's not true. You are presently planting wine vineyards on the island. Newsflash, wine grapes never grew in the Channel Islands naturally. That would be an invasive plant. Oh, we're going to go to downtown Two Harbors and downtown Avalon and tell everybody 95% of the flora has to be pulled up. Oh, the golf course. Yeah, the golf course. Yep, that's got to be yanked up too, because you know what? That's all invasive plants. This is where I'm saying, folks, you need to pause before you call me up and say, well, I've been to Catalina every year for X number of years, and you just don't know what you're talking about, Rick. No. Open your eyes. Take a swig of coffee, tea, whatever you need to wake yourself up in the morning. Look around. If this is really about removing everything invasive, fine. And when they're like, hey, Rick, well, we're just trying to bring the island back to where it was. Well, at what time period? Because the first thing is Avalon had a complete rock bay. Do you know where that rock bay is? Yeah, that's the L.A. Harbor breakwater and the Wilmington seawall. All those rocks that you see where the lighthouse is built upon, yep, that came from Catalina. That came from Avalon when we blew up the rock harbor and we put it on barges and brought it back over and built a breakwater. Are we really going to go to the people of L.A., the L.A. Harbor, one of the biggest ports on the planet, and go, yeah, you need to give that back to Catalina because, you know what, the owners of the island really want to take it back to circa whatever. No, we're not doing that. So, folks, this is why I say emotional stuff, you have to look what it's really about. And what it's about is, in my opinion, people wanting to have the island set up a certain way, and they just don't like deer. That's not for them because the deer don't belong to them. Deer are a public trust. And if we don't fight it on Catalina, then when we get to other parts of the state of California where they try to do simple things by calling this an island ecosystem in the middle of the meadow, we get the same issue. So, yes, we are going to fight in Catalina. We're going to fight everywhere we have to fight to preserve your rights and to stop these back doors from coming at the Second Amendment. And I'm going to talk about some of the devious things that are being done because this has been a tough week. I'm going to share a little bit about my experience so that all of you understand where I come from when I testify on these things. Because, hey, I'm your lobbyist. I'm the guy that's up there making arguments for you. And a lot of people will try to put emotions and attach them to me. Oh, Rick doesn't like this member of the legislature. Rick doesn't like this. Rick doesn't like that. And so I'm going to set the record straight in this final segment on what Rick does and doesn't like and kind of how I do my job and where I come from when I do it. Because I think you, the people, have a right to know who's representing you. And a lot of people aren't willing to do this. We'll be back on Firing Line Radio.
The California Rifle and Pistol Association has worked tirelessly for 150 years to promote your rights to self-protection, shooting sports, firearms collecting, hunting, conservation, and every aspect of your Second Amendment rights. CRPA works tirelessly and relentlessly to defend the civil and constitutional rights of individuals to choose to responsibly own and use firearms. Every dollar that CRPA receives from its members and donors stays and works in California to support your hunting and Second Amendment rights and the fight against politicians, elitists, and bureaucrats who would deprive individuals of those rights. Join the California Rifle and Pistol Association today at CRPA.org. That's CRPA.org.
Hi, folks. Rick Travis. If you're a concealed handgun carrier and have a firearm to defend your home, you need to have CCW Safe on your side. CCW Safe is your defense if you're forced to use your firearm for self-defense or the protection of a loved one. CCW Safe provides and pays 100% upfront defense funds for high-quality attorneys, expert witnesses, and investigators you need following a critical incident with no reimbursement. And they do it all for one flat yearly fee starting at $179 a year. CCW Safe has permit and non-permit plans to protect California residents in this state and while traveling across the country. So check out their new ultimate plan with no caps on criminal and civil defense, $1 million for bond coverage, a dedicated $1 million of civil liability, and many other benefits. You defend your life, CCW Safe will defend your freedom and financial future. In California, CCW Safe has got you covered. So join now at ccwsafe.com.
AM 590, The Answer.
This portion of The Firing Line is brought to you by CCW Safe.
Welcome back to Firing Line Radio. I'm your host, Rick Travis, the legislative director for the California Rifle Pistol Association. In our final segment today, I said I was going to kind of tell you where I'm coming from and how I do the job I do. So I'm going to start off with a few things and clear the air. The Second Amendment, as I've said many times on this program, does not belong to a political party. It belongs to the people, like every other part of the Constitution. So I do not look at my job as I only talk to Republicans who hold up their right hand and say, I'm not a rhino, and I only believe in the Constitution of the United States, because everyone takes that oath. And I judge each man and woman by what they say they do. Second, everyone goes to work in whatever career field they do because of something that motivates them. And it's not my job to judge that motivation, it's just to understand it. So I can take a Democrat who is in LA County by the name of Assemblymember Gibson and say, while him and I don't agree on a great many things, I also found his compelling argument about losing his son to a hit and run accident very, very solid when he emotionally got up and said, hey, this is why I came to Sacramento. I never want parents to have to go through this, not being able to see the person that took their child's life convicted. I get it. And I got to watch fellow Democrats telling me it was wrong. I got to watch him stand his ground. You know what? one dad to another, that was very easy for me to look at him and say, well done. So my point is, I don't hate on somebody because I disagree with them. Everybody's human, and I try to treat them with that respect. The second part is understanding where I come into this business. Why am I doing this? Like, that was one of Phil's ongoing questions. Why do you do this job? There's no damn way I would do it. Okay, well, why do I do it? I do it because I am passionate about wildlife. I've been a scoutmaster for 25 years, was very proud of all the young men and women that came up in the program. Some made it to Eagle. I was fortunate enough to have 21 Eagle Scouts, which I'm very proud of. I also had several people get the highest ranks in the venturing program as young ladies and young men. Very proud of that. But more basic to me is I grew up and was born into a lower income area of Gardena, California, that was zoned as kennel property. I grew up in a dog kennel with Shetland sheepdogs, also known as Shelties. The job I had was mowing lawns and being a kennel boy, from everything from small toy breeds, which while I understand them, I realized just wasn't my thing, to some of the bigger breeds like Malamutes and Afghan Hounds and Siberian Huskies and St. Bernards and Great Danes. And I personally fell in love with the American Labrador Retriever. And I always get people to give me grief of like, but Rick, what about the English labs? I get it. I've had a couple of English labs. One of the labs that we just put down a week ago was a female English lab. She belonged to my son. They're great. Love them. This is not my lab. My labs are always the thin, more energetic American labs. They're got that lean muscle to them, and they're a great dog to go take hunting. And yes, I know English labs hunt, so we don't need to have that debate. But what I'm saying is, for multiple decades, I have lived a life with dogs. And I have seen multiple attacks. I watched my parents have to fight City Hall, literally counties and the state, over understanding that dog breeders were not puppy mills. And that is a fight that goes on to this day, some 60 years later from when I was born. I have watched how the governments, Republican, Democrat, and everything in between, have misled the public on many, many debates. I've watched other groups and non-governmental organizations, nonprofits, misinform the people because that's how they make money to pay their paychecks. So when I come into this space, I also come in as having worked in law enforcement, been in the military, worked in EMS as a first responder, and seen the tragedies of when people weren't able to defend themselves up close and personal. I have worked to help young men and women learn how to use firearms for over 45 years and watched how they turned out, i.e. not criminals. So there's a lot of science. Now, I'm not going to tell you that, yeah, when you lose a dog, as I lost my best dog a week ago, that there's not a lot of emotional stuff that comes in with it. There is. I just got choked up just talking about it. But there's also the joy of a puppy. And I'm going to close this thing out with the difference between a saying and a cliche. I hate the word cliche, not because it's French. I hate the word cliche because what cliche means is a saying that is overused. And I will tell you, no, cliches is a term that's used in our culture to downplay a truth. So any of you that have ever had chickens realize that before you have chickens, you hear things like henpecked, pecking order, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We could go down a long list of them and have a whole show on that. And it's just a saying until you have chickens. And you're like, oh, that's what it means to be henpecked. That's brutal. Or, oh, the pecking order by where which chicken gets which box, which roost, which everything. Yeah. And it changes over time. So there's a saying that goes with dogs. And it goes like this. You get one dog in life that stands out over all the other dogs. I don't buy that. And I'm going to tell you why and how it relates to everything. You get more than one dog. In fact, a really good friend of mine, Chuck Michelle, who's the president of our organization, when I lost my dog, said, life is a series of dogs. Let me say that again. Life is a series of dogs if you allow it to be. And that's a truth. Folks, that's not just a saying, that's a fact. If you open yourself up to dogs, your life will be a series of them. And if you don't have a dog, that's not because there wasn't a dog that wouldn't love you and wouldn't be a great companion. That's because you chose not to have a dog. And there may be multiple reasons for those, and some of those perfectly logical. And so I'm not being negative or emotional and saying, oh, everybody has to go buy a dog today. That's not my message. My message is, though, that tells somebody that you only get one, not true. I had one dog, an Australian Shepherd, wasn't my favorite breed, but was a great dog. Saved my son's life when he was about a year and a half old and ran into the street, and we couldn't get to him in slow motion. Here came a car, and the dog grabbed him and pulled him back to the curb and saved his life. You know, was that the one dog? We thought so at the time. But then we got another dog, and that dog was unique and did its own things. And I thought, wow, that dog was pretty special. And then we just had the dog that replaced him, and that was Rocky. Rocky was the mascot for the CRPA for the better part of 12 years. And we don't have him. It's sad. You can hear it in my voice. But he was the one dog for the moment. I will get a new pup here in the next couple of months, and he'll be a new dog, new experiences, new ways to do things. And probably by the end of his life, there will be people say, was that the dog? I don't know, because if I still am around and kicking and doing things, I will get another dog, and maybe that's the dog. But the point is, you have to open yourself up and not use excuses, and cliches become excuses to accept things. I use this dog moment because it's emotional, and it's rather raw on my heart, but it's also to explain something to all of you. We use cliches in politics, cliches in public policy, cliches in everything. Cliches are nothing more than an excuse to not get involved, to not be there. Because you know what? To get involved, it's sometimes, in a very scientific word, painful. It hurts. It takes something out of you. It can be soul-crushing. It could be gut-wrenching. And believe me, the last week without my dog, checkbox on all the above. But to close myself off would be to start closing myself off to everything that means anything to me. And would the dog have ever wanted that? No, he wouldn't have. He was a dog that lived life for every moment up until his death. So folks, when I look at you and I say, don't sit on the couch, get up and vote. Don't stand back and not join, get involved. Don't sit there and go, well, these kids are going to have to figure it out. I had to figure it out. No, you didn't. People helped you out. Don't use a cliche. Don't use an excuse. Get engaged. Get involved. CRPA offers a multitude of ways to do that. CRPA, you can be as disconnected as just using a phone app, all the way to sitting down and meeting fellow members and people and engaging, being out at Rahaga's and helping us with the youth shoot that's coming up, you know, being involved in politics, walking precincts. We have something for everyone. So if I hear so much as any one of you ever in my presence look at me and go, I'm too old, cliche, excuse. I don't know what cliche, excuse. Anything that's an excuse, I'm going to call you on it. And know the reason I'm calling you on it isn't based on emotionalism. It's based on science. Whether you're involved or not is a choice. If you choose not to, just say, you know what? I choose not to do this with my life. And I'll be like, okay, I won't give you any grief. But if you give me a cliche, you're going to get grief. And this is not a cliche. Be safe, shoot straight, and fight back for your rights with the California Rifle and Pistol Association. Have a good week.
The Firing Line Radio Show has been brought to you by the California Rifle and Pistol Association, CCW Safe, and Turner's Outdoorsman. Turner's Outdoorsman, California's number one hunting, fishing, and shooting sports retailer since 1971, now has 33 locations across California and one in Tucson, Arizona. Turner's is your one-stop shop for all your shooting, sports, and fishing tackle needs. They offer a full selection and unmatched prices on firearms, ammunition, gun safes, shooting accessories, archery equipment, and fishing tackle. Visit Turner's.com now and sign up for the Turner's Discount Club for free and get their weekly ads and members-only specials sent directly to your inbox. Turner's is a proud supporter of the fight to protect your rights in their continued support of the California Rifle and Pistol Association. For more information and to sign up for Turner's Discount Club or to shop online, visit Turner's.com.
AM 590, The Answer.